WPFW. If you can't drive it, donate it. WPFW will get the proceeds, and you'll get a tax break. Go to WPFWFM.org or call 1-866-WPFW-CAR. That's 1-866-973-9227 for more information. Help WPFW continue building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
I'm Wiza Muntali, host of Africa Now, and you're tuned to member-supported WPFW Washington.
Good evening. It's just about 6 p.m. in the nation's capital. The name is Garland Nixon. I'm on every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. here in Washington, D.C. I want to thank my main man, Kalia. He does a fantastic job every week. And if you call in 202-588-0893, you will get an opportunity to talk to him. Let me remind everybody, when you call in, we have a 10 second delay, so that if you don't keep the phone to your ear, if you keep the phone to your ear, there's no delay. If you set the phone down and you listen to the radio or the computer in your background, there'll be a delay. And when I say next caller, you won't hear me for 10 seconds and we might not get to you. Additionally, if you're on hold, turn the radio or the TV down in the background, the radio or the computer in the background, because when we're talking, you'll hear me, and then 10 seconds later, you'll hear me again, you'll hear you. So it's really screwed up if you've got this echo going on, because you've got both of them going on at the same time. All right. Now, I wanted to talk about some, one of the things that I tried to bring to people's attention is the level of corruption in U.S. government. And in addition, that when it comes to to foreign policy, right? To a lot of, but I'll put it like this. Let me ask you this. Let me give you two things. Recently, Donald Trump said, yes, we're going to Venezuela and we've got to overthrow the government of Venezuela because there's drugs. Oh, there's drugs and we got to stop drugs. And of course, all this information came out that the drugs don't come from Venezuela, right? And then Trump says, well, they have our oil and our land that they nationalized and we want our oil back. And of course, as you know, if you listen to this show, the very beginning, I said, I'm really supposed to believe that the country that has more oil, proven oil reserves than any country in the world, that we're like surrounded them and threatened them, and it ain't for oil, that like there's actually, is there anyone stupid enough left in this country to believe that? I think there may be, but I just haven't met them. Oh, no, Venezuela, it's not for oil. Why do I say that? Because it's always for oil, it's always for corruption, there's always thievery going on, right? I'm going to give you a little bit of info in a few minutes, right? Whether it's Iraq, whatever it is. I once had a client, this guy had I'm not going to talk about what he did, but this guy has so much money, he spent money, he bought like houses on the waterfront, right? He'd buy a house on the waterfront and he'd go say, I like the house, and he'd buy the whole thing. He'd tell the people, just leave. I want the furniture. Oh, you got two boats parked there at the dock. I want them too. The lawnmower, leave everything here. I don't care. I like the house. I like the way you got set. Just take your food, take your clothes, take your stuff like that. And he'd pay them so much that they'd say, sure. If somebody's going to give you double what the property is worth, who cares? You can have everything, the lawnmower included. But that's how much money he had. And I think at the time, the guy had five houses. At the time, and let me just say this. When I found out what he did, he was part of the government of Iraq that was put in by the U.S. government. When they overthrew the government of Iraq, they put him in charge. So basically, he was just money. They put him in, and everybody there, when they put these people in place in Iraq, they just stole every dime, hundreds of millions, billions stole. Iraq was nothing but money thieving going on. Of course, you already know Afghanistan. What is it? $2.4 trillion or something, $2.7 trillion disappeared over the course of that time. And then they just walked away and left. Hey, we're there to stop the Taliban. $2.4 trillion, and 20 years later, they're like, we're leaving. Well, who'll be in charge? The Taliban. Well, are you afraid? Nah, we got paid, man, and $2.4 trillion. What do we care? They didn't care who was involved. The man in the moon could have been in charge when they left. They were all paid. Now, here's my point with this. Every one of these operations is the same. If they tell you we're trying to do this to this country for a good reason, it's always a lie. Now, why do I bring that up? Sadly, there are people amongst us who I know, God knows why, who, and you've heard me say, I want to sound like a broken record, but I'm going to present some data, some information to you today. For some reason, there's people that they will always understand that about past wars. But whatever is the present war, they always believe the lie that the government's getting them. So they're like, yeah, anything I told them about a past war, they would 100% believe it. If I said the Ukraine conflict's going on, you know, that's the same scam, they wouldn't believe it. They wouldn't believe it. They don't. It's like when the actual scam is going on, they don't believe it. And then years after the scam is off, they look back and, oh, I was scammed, right? And I say, you can't blame the scammer. You get scammed every time. And I'm going to present you data. The Ukraine conflict is a financial scam amongst many other things. But it's so let me give you some information here. Let's start here. Everybody remembers the story of Hunter Biden, right? You know, the Republicans made a big deal out of it. And I was like, yeah, it's all true. But I'm going to show you why it don't matter if it's Democrat or Republicans. Because what does Hunter Biden do? The United States overthrows the government of Ukraine. And all of a sudden, Hunter Biden shows up in Ukraine. Son of the vice president. He gets a job, paying him a couple million dollars over the course of a year or so. He doesn't speak the language. He doesn't know anything about the industries he's in. And we're supposed to believe that he was contributing to the industry. No, that was, of course, corruption. He got money because it was corruption. Nothing else. It was pure corruption. He's getting money because he's Biden's son. That's the way it works. Now, the Republicans screamed about it, but like they're pretending. Like the Republicans, like, yeah, that's terrible. Any of them was just mad because they wasn't getting their piece of the pie. So let's see. But what's interesting is they left a lot of names out, right? The only thing we heard was Hunter Biden. The Republicans screamed about Hunter Biden. Yes, Hunter Biden was purely taking loot. He was getting paid. Okay, fair enough. Let me give you some other names and show you something. Hunter Biden wasn't the only guy. The name of the company was Burisma, right? People were literally quitting their jobs in the Obama administration and going over to work in Ukraine, and they're doing the same thing now because we run the country, and so billions are going over. They're going to get their fair share. Let me continue. Let's start with the name, one that I've said before, Amos Hochstein. He was in the Obama administration. He was in the Biden administration. And even right now, he's over in Israel, supposedly working for the Trump administration to do some negotiating in Israel. He is a leech. He is a corrupt criminal. So here's the thing. So I'm going to give you some info. Do with it what you want to demonstrate to you that this is the U.S. Like a guy called last night, man, why don't you talk about Trump more? And I'm like, well, you can watch MSNBC or CNN and hear all you want about Trump. Why you want me to parrot what the mainstream media is parroting? That just ain't what I do. Right. Let's start here. President Obama announces. So this is 2015. Right. 2015, President Obama announces more key administration posts. Today, President Obama announced his intent to nominate the following individuals to key administrations. Amos Hochstein, Assistant Secretary for Energy Resources Department of State. So Amos Hochstein in 2015 got a job with the Obama administration as the Assistant Secretary for Energy Resources. That's what he did. He was working there for a little while. And then he decided, now, keep in mind, he is working for the Obama administration for the State Department. What did he do then? He then quit his job and went over to Ukraine and got a much more lucrative job. And he was there for a while. Let's see. Here we go. This is 2020, 5 years later. U.S. businessman and former diplomat Amos Hochstein, that's the same guy. So in 2020, he was working for the Obama administration in the State Department. Let's see, where did he resign from in 2020? Amos Hochstein has resigned as an independent director on the supervisory board of Ukrainian National Gas Company, Naftogaz. So here's my point. Here's the scam. Now think about this. We heard about the Hunter Biden stuff. Yes. Okay. We ain't stupid. We know Hunter Biden was over there trying to eat. Okay. But my point is this. When the U.S. government overthrows a country, everybody goes in and gets their fair share of the loot. And they're doing it right now. And I'm going to go right on through to still doing it now. Okay, so Amos Hochstein quits working for the Obama administration. Over he goes to Ukraine. He signs a big, very wealthy contract with Naftogaz, the Ukrainian national gas company. And then 5 years later, I guess he's, you know, he got a lot of money in 5 years. He walks away. Isn't that interesting? How quit your job with Obama, the State Department, and go to a country where we just overthrew the government and fill your filthy, criminal, crooked, shiesty pockets. Let me continue. How about this? What was the name of the company that Hunter Biden worked for? The name of the company was called Burisma, right? Burisma. It was owned by a guy named Igor Kolomoisky, right? An oligarch. Okay, but Hunter Biden wasn't the only guy that went to Burisma. Here's something from February 15, 2017, Ukrainian news. Independent director at Burisma Group, Joseph Kofor Black. I'm excited to join Burisma's board of directors and to focus on strategic development and security issues to expand Burisma's global opportunities. Ambassador Black resigned from public service after a 30-year career and is considered a leading expert and significant figure on U.S. international relations. Joseph Kofor Black, a former director of the CIA's Counterterrorist Center and ambassador at large for counterterrorism, joined the board. So, Hunter Biden joins the board at Burisma, and Kofor Black, formerly the number two man for the CIA, he shows up in Ukraine and he joins the board of Burisma right beside Hunter Biden. Oh, but wait a minute. Meanwhile, Amos Hochstein resigns from the State Department and then he goes to Ukraine and he signs a big fat contract too. Isn't this interesting? The whole United States government, all of these schmucks are leaving their positions and they all show up in Ukraine and they all fill in their pockets as the board of directors, all of them just conveniently all guess. What did Hunter Biden know about running a gas company or being on the board? What did Kofor Black, he was CIA. What did he know about running a gas company? Nothing. That would be like somebody hiring me to be a transmission mechanic. I don't know how to fix transmissions. But Hunter Biden and Kofor Black and Amos Hochstein weren't there to fix transmissions and they wasn't there to do anything but collect that loot. This was pure scammy corruption. Ukraine is nothing but a place for your tax dollars to go to by the hundreds of billions so a bunch of criminals can launder them in their pockets and they're going to say to you, we're over there standing up for democracy against Putin. A bunch of filthy lies. I see we got some callers. Let me go through one more thing. Let me bring you up to today. Ex-CIA director joins board of Ukraine's largest company. That article's from today. Mike Pompeo, CIA director and secretary of state in the first Trump administration. Where we go, blah, blah, blah. He joined the advisory board of Ukraine's leading defense company, Firepoint, which develops long-range drones capable of striking deep inside Russia. So now, Mike Pompeo's over there joining the board of Firepoint, and he's going to get paid. Oh, but wait, this ain't Mike Pompeo's first time around. Here's another article. Former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has racked up a string of lucrative directorships since leaving office. Pompeo, whose security detail was revoked by President Trump in January, signed up for an advisory board with Kyivstar and its NASDAQ-listed parent Vion in June of last year. Financial filings show. Documents reveal the post show that Pompeo was paid $50,000 a month or $600,000 for strategic financial advice. Pompeo's Delaware-based impact investments firm also handed stock warrants worth $16 million and a $3 million bonus in connection with successful completion of a strategic M&A transaction. Kyivstar is also planning to list on the NASDAQ by the end of this year. Gee, I wonder if Mike Pompeo, former government official, so might be able to help them. Maybe, do you think maybe Kyivstar, who was going to list for $2.2 billion, do you think maybe they hired Mike Pompeo because he could help them list on the get listed? It was pure graft and corruption. So Mike Pompeo goes to Kyiv and signs a multi-million dollar contract for cell phones. What does he know about that? But that was in April, last April. Last April, he signed a multi-million dollar contract for cell phones in Ukraine. This month, he signs another multi-million dollar contract, this time for a drone company in Ukraine. Oh, by the way, Hunter Biden, Ukraine. Amos Hochstein, board of directors, Ukraine. Kofor Black, former number two man at the CIA, board of directors, Ukraine. I think we've got a pattern here. Anyone stupid enough in this day and age to believe that the United States government is in Ukraine for democracy, I guess you still believe that Iraq has weapons of mass destruction. I guess you still believe, or I guess you believe Trump when he says we're going to save the people of America from drugs coming out of Venezuela. Oh, by the way, Trump had another thing he said today. He had a tweet and he said, yes, there are protests in Iran. And if the Iranians shoot the protesters, then we will be there to save the people from. Oh, really? So Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu comes to the United States and says to Trump, hey, we need to bomb Iran. And then all of a sudden, Trump says, well, you know, if the Iranians are doing something to the protesters, we'll come protect the protesters. Is anybody stupid enough to believe that? That we're going to Iran. We got to start a war. Why? We got to protect the protesters. And how are we going to do that? By bombing them all. It's absurd. My point being, I don't understand people who still believe these lies. It's a scam. Ukraine war will probably be over soon because they're going to be done, stole all the money they can possibly steal, and they will walk away. They will exercise the Samsonite option. They will fill their Samsonite luggage with money, and they will leave Ukraine to its fate, and its fate is to be smashed to bits, which was always its fate. But they had to eat before they could leave Ukraine to its fate. How can you look at Hunter Biden, at Kofor Black, at Amos Hochstein, at Mike Pompeo? Now, all I did, I didn't want to take an hour. I could have kept going on with the names of United States people who went over to Ukraine, signed contracts. And you know that every time the government, the Congress celebrates, hey, good news, we sent another $40 billion to Ukraine to protect them. And they're like, was that $40 billion that went to Ukraine? Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. I'm heading for Kyiv. I got to get to Ukraine to get some of that $40 billion. I mean, to help them to have democracy. Every time they send that loot over there, these vultures are going over there to get their fair share. And then they go on TV and brainwash you into believing that they're there for democracy or to stop drugs or to save the protesters. They always got a lie. I just don't understand Americans who still can look at this evidence and just don't. Oh, I don't, Garland, I think you're just you're pushing a Russian narrative. Come on. What do you love, Saddam Hussein or something? For God's sake, people, wake up. 202-588-0893. We got open lines. First call, you're on air. What's your name? Where are you calling from? I think we lost our caller. He's not there.
Is that me?
No. Oh, my gosh, it's you.
I didn't hear the you talking to, is this me?
Okay. You're on the air.
Is this me?
But we're having a little bit of struggle, but I think you got something important to say.
Am I on the air?
I don't know. I think you are. I think we're both on the air.
Oh, okay. I'm just surprised that I got in. I've been trying to get in for several calls, and Max always gets in. so I was expecting him to be first. But what I wanted to call about is, well, just to remark about what you just said is, fool me, as a saying that says, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. But, you know, it, with the education system, there's the propaganda going on. But I wanted to talk about what you were talking about with Russia when you went on your trip to Russia. Mm-hmm. And you were talking about the conditions over in Russia and how the food and everything and how they're healthier and everything. And I had somebody that I knew that went to Russia, and they were talking about the transportation system over there. And they were talking about how you don't even have to wait for a train. You could just, mm-hmm. You could just hop on a train anytime you want to. And I wanted to push back a little bit on this narrative that's been all over the media about how the government workers have been fired and how horrible it is and how the government workers are there to help us and everything like that. And it's in my experience that that's absolutely not true. That is, you know, it's all this bureaucracy and the government workers, they do not help you at all. As a matter of fact, they hinder you at every turn. And they sit up there and they think that their jobs are, you know, just as secure, and they basically don't do anything for you. I have at some point, but for the most part, when I get in touch with a government worker, it's a bunch of bureaucracy. You can't get through. You don't know. You can't find out who's in charge of what. Flint, Michigan is one example about when they were trying to get the EPA in to look at the water situation. They went through hell trying to get the EPA, and finally they came in and they tested the water. You're talking about Cancer Alley, all of these. We have forever chemicals. Every time you turn around, you know, you have lead poisoning. You have government didn't do anything about it. As a matter of fact,
throw something at you.
Facilitated all of this.
Well, let me throw something at you, a couple of things. Number one, I'll say this. When you talk about Flint, Michigan, it wasn't the everyday worker. It was the people in charge. And I think there was a reason that the people in charge didn't want to get that looked into, because it was the decisions made by the governor and the people in charge that did that. But let me say this. I feel like this. And it all depends. There's all kind of different governors of federal workers. I don't want to put them all into one basket. But here's my opinion. Let's say the government has $150 billion. As an example, they just increased the Pentagon budget by $150 billion. They're going to buy bombers and this and that. You know what? I would rather that they pay somebody working in a woman who's got two kids, and she's got to pay for her home, and she's got to pay for her rent, and she's got to feed her kids. If that money doesn't go to her, they're going to steal every dime of it. So my opinion is this. I would rather see the money go to everyday people as government workers than I would have a few billionaires steal every penny of it. The money is going to go anywhere. The federal government's budget is going to be spent. The only question is where. I would rather they spend it on average everyday people who are government workers, because if they don't, the oligarchs are going to steal every dime of it. What do you think of that?
I think like they're still in it anyway. First of all, war is big business. It's always been big business, and so it's going to keep. They're still in it anyway. They're not paying the government workers, a lot in the first place. They're stealing from the government workers, But I'm just, just for instance, like in Maryland. In Maryland, you cannot build wealth in Maryland. For instance, if the federal government gives you a cost of living for your Social Security or your SSDI, Maryland would literally take it away, and you would end up underwater. You know, they'll allow the BGE.
But wait, that's not the fault of the government workers. That's the fault of the people who are in charge. The government workers are victims of the same policies that we are. The government workers are the ones who they're getting squeezed the same way we are. They're the working class the same way we are. So I don't want to blame the working class people for the decisions made by the powerful and the political class that hurt all the working class people. When I see a governor, a government worker, I see that person as in the same political class as me, who has the same problems as me. We got another caller, but I'll let you get the last word.
Okay, well, just let me give you another example of what I'm talking about. It wasn't a person that is in charge. For instance, I don't want to get personal, but we almost lost our house because my husband's SSDI was cut off because they said he wasn't disabled when he's obviously disabled. They did that twice. It was the government workers that did that. It wasn't anybody that was in charge that did that.
Those decisions aren't the work. Those are the decisions of the people in charge. The people who write those rules.
Somebody had the flag. Well, okay.
The people who write the rules as to who's going to get the money or not are the people in charge. But at any rate, I certainly appreciate it, and I appreciate your calling, and we may disagree a little bit, but I'm glad, you know, you got an opportunity to come on here and to say the things that you wanted to say. And whether we agree or not, I certainly appreciate you calling and listening to the show, and I'm glad you got the opportunity to come in here and voice your opinion. All right?
Thank you.
All right. Next caller, you're on the air. What's your name, where you're calling from? Next caller?
Is that me?
I think it is. Hello? Is this the next caller? Yeah.
I thought there was someone before me. This is Ingrid. Hi, Garland.
Hi, Ingrid. Oh, long time no hear from. How you been, Ingrid?
Well, I'm just admiring all the work you're doing, Garland, and how many places you turn up, and it's wonderful. Happy New Year to you. I have two things I'd like to bring up. One is about Palestine, this Zionist Bozell that has been appointed the ambassador, and not to Palestine, but to South Africa. And he's a total Zionist, and he has vowed to convince the South Africans to withdraw their genocide case in the International Court of Justice. And just the point I'd like to make is South Africa has the right to refuse him as an ambassador, and I hope they do. And on to my second point.
Yeah, you know what that reminds me of, Ingrid? You know what that reminds me of, Ingrid? When somebody a witness have seen a mafia commit a crime, and they go to the witness and tell the witness, you better not come to court and testify. It's the same kind of thing, you know what I mean? The criminal going to South Africa saying, you know, you really ought to drop that case against me.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Exactly. And kind of tying all Palestine back to Russia, if not Ukraine, I find it just, I'm curious if Jeffrey Epstein had any interchange with Bill Browder.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about Epstein, if you really look into it, is that the part of the Epstein connection that we hear is the part about the sexual pedophiles and all that stuff. What's left out is, let me give you an example. When there's an infamous, there's a movie, Air America, that a lot of people have looked into this during the Iran-Contra, you know, in the 1980s. That infamous incident, and they had the CIA had these planes that were flying cocaine into the United States, right? Working with the Contras, they were raising dark money, black money, whatever you want to call it, bringing drugs in on these planes, right? And when an investigation started looking at it, guess who bought those planes? Jeffrey Epstein. Jeffrey Epstein was involved in the Iran-Contra affair. Epstein was a center for all kinds of criminal. He was involved in drug running. He was involved in money laundering. He was involved in running guns and weapons running. Epstein was involved in all of that stuff. The part with the pedophile and the sex was just one part of the operation. And of course, the man was best friends with Ehud Barak, worked all the time, business partner with a prime minister of Israel. He lobbied for technology grant for Israel. He did all of the, I mean, it's pretty clear the man was working for Israel. He was hanging out with the prime minister, with an Israeli prime minister. And the thing about Epstein is I think they're okay with us looking at Epstein only through the lens of some kind of pedophile and sexual predator, because that way we don't look at all of the money, the gun running and the connection to junk bonds and all this other criminal activity he was involved in. Go ahead.
Absolutely. Thank you for focusing on that. Yep.
Oh, did you have another comment?
Well, no, not. Thank you for taking that up. Yes, and
All right. Thank you very much.
Are now starting to speak about this Les Wexner, who was the guy that after Iran-Contra, Epstein got the planes transferred over to Les Wexner's business, and who knows what he was actually doing with them. But thank you, Garland.
Well, I can tell you a little bit about Les Wexner. Right. Les Wexner was Epstein's business partner, supposedly. He was his financier, supposedly, but we never really found out what Epstein did. But he and Les Wexner. Now, who is Les Wexner? He's the guy that owned Victoria's Secret and The Limited, right? Right. But if you start looking into it, you will find this, that Les Wexner's money came. It came from Meyer Lansky, Bugsy Siegel, those kind of guys. It came from Meyer Lansky. Les Wexner's money ended up ultimately was from organized crime in Las Vegas. Let me ask you this. Let me just throw this up. You know what's interesting? Here's something that's interesting about organized crime in America. Everything about organized crime in America, the only thing we really learn about is, for the most part, would be Italian organized crime. A little teeny bit, we'll learn about maybe Irish organized crime. Very little about Jewish organized crime, which was as pervasive as any of them. And I will say this. The Adelsons, right? Now, remember, you know, the Jewish organized crime pretty much started and funded and built Las Vegas, right? Okay. Sheldon Adelson. Where's Adelson from? The person who funds the Trump administration and Donald Trump. Where's Adelson from? Las Vegas. You think that's not Jewish mafia crime money? It's the Adelson money? Go ahead, Ingrid.
Yeah, I'm just agreeing with you. Right. Las Vegas.
Yes.
You're way ahead of me, Garland.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, you hear about Adelson, but nobody ever says, well, I wonder if that's Jewish mafia money. If you made your money in Las Vegas over all these years, it's some kind of mafia money. I'll tell you that right now. You can rest assured that. And where else do the Adelsons work out of? Singapore. A British pretty much colony. Again, you know what I mean? Yeah. Anyway, do you have any final words, Ingrid?
Sorry, no. I'm trying to cook here, so I'm not thinking too straight. But anyway.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Certainly appreciate it. Now, we got any more calls? No. Okay. Now, I've had a lot of black folks say to me that I know talk about that are from Maryland. I live in Maryland. Say Westmore. You know, a lot of them are angry at him because they had this reparations bill, and he killed the reparations bill. And he's done a lot of things that, you know, black folks and, you know, I'm not so thrilled about this guy. What's the deal? So here's what I'm going to do. Let's do a little deep dive, a shallow dive into Westmore. I mean, he's black and you're supposed to say he's black. He's great. Let's look at a little bit of his history. First of all, he's a Rhodes Scholar, just like Obama. Just like Bill Clinton, they're Rhodes Scholars. They go to, and who was Cecil Rhodes, the guy who started Rhodesia, the guy who was basically, he's named after Cecil Rhodes, and it's British, basically. It's British crown kind of stuff. But let's look a little bit into him, right? Let's look at his history, right? Okay, let's see. Moore was born in Maryland, raised primarily in New York. Graduated from Johns Hopkins after several years in the U.S. Army. He became an investment banker in New York. He served as the CEO of the Robin Hood Foundation. Let's go. Now, here's what's weird about him, right? This is kind of weird. I don't know. It doesn't mean anything. In the summer of 1984, Moore's mother took him and his two sisters to live in the Bronx, New York, with her parents. His occasional babysitter was Kamala Harris's stepmother. How weird is that, right? That's kind of weird. I don't know. I mean, I guess it doesn't mean anything. Okay, so we got a guy. He was, let's see. So Wes Moore graduated with an associate from Valley Forge with an associate degree, completed the requirements for the United States Army, and joined as a second lieutenant of military intelligence. That's interesting. He attended John Hopkins University, graduated from with the School of International Relations. I don't know how much you know about John Hopkins School of International Studies, where Zbigniew Brzezinski was. If there's a neocon to be found, when they left, what was the guy's name? The guys that were with the Bush administration, Wolfowitz, Pearl, those guys, the majority of those neocons were at the School of International Studies for John. It's Neocon University. Okay, so he was military intelligence. Then he graduated from Neocon University. We keep going down a little bit. Okay. Let's see. Now, listen to this. In February 2006, Moore was named the White House Fellow to Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice. Oh, boy. So we worked for Condoleezza Rice. Let's see what else. Okay. Condoleezza Rice. Let me see. I am finding. Let's see. He later worked as an investment banker at Deutsche Bank in Manhattan and at Citibank. So he was in military intelligence. He worked for Deutsche Bank as an investment banker. He worked for Citibank. He worked for Condoleezza Rice as a White House fellow. And let's see if we can find anything else. He also interned at the United States Department of Homeland Security under Secretary Tom Ridge. Well, wait a minute. He's supposed to be a Democrat. He worked for Tom Ridge. That was under the Bush administration and Republicans. He worked for Condoleezza Rice, neocon, warmongering, under the Bush administration. You see what I'm saying? He was an investment banker. So I'm going to say this to black folks. I'm just going to throw this out there. The man was a Rhodes Scholar. Trust me when I tell you that, not a good thing. But he worked for Condoleezza Rice, right? Republican, neocon. He worked for Tom Ridge at the Homeland Security. Republican, neocon. He was an Army intelligence. Automatically, I don't trust him. He was an investment banker on Wall Street. And you wonder why he's giving you the shaft. And you wonder why you're hearing words of like, hey, I think Wes Moore would be a great president. If an investment banker that worked for Condoleezza Rice and Tom Ridge in the Bush administration, from Citibank and Deutsche Bank and military, if that's your idea of a good president, then you must have liked George W. Bush. That's who Wes Moore is. So when you wake up in the morning and you say, why'd Wes Moore, I don't understand why he did that. I thought he was a good black governor. You're being had again. I'm just throwing that out. I ain't here to hate him or love him. You know me. I'm not a Democrat. I don't like the Democrats. Don't like the Republicans for that reason. Let me ask you this. What would be so different if you heard, hey, he's a Republican. Really? Who'd he work for? Let's see. He worked for Condoleezza Rice and he worked for Tom Ridge. And he was an investment banker on Wall Street for Citibank and Deutsche Bank. How would you know that that wasn't a Republican or that wasn't a Democrat? What makes you think that's so different from a Republican? And you ask yourself, who did he work for? Republican administration. I'm telling you, what's the difference? Which car are you in? Both cars are in the same lane going in the same direction, a red car and a blue car. I don't care which car. Two shoes. You put a red shoe on one foot and a blue shoe on the other foot, and they both running in the same direction. There's no way that if somebody says to me, hey, tell me about that politician. Well, let's see. He's a former investment banker that worked for the Bush administration, Canada, the Homeland Security. He's former military intelligence. And if somebody said, is he a Republican or a Democrat? I'd say, I really don't know, because that fits the bill for both of them. And you wonder why you're getting a shaft. You're shocking, amazing. I've been screwed over by an investment bank who worked for Condoleezza Rice. Oh my gosh, what a shock. Anyway, two 202-588-0893. Next caller, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
So is it me?
It is you. What's happening, my brother? You sound like you a Westmore fan?
Don't get me started on good old Governor Westmore, the Barack Obama wannabe. And I don't think the black window dressing game is going to work anyway, especially for black conscious people. I got no love for good old Governor Westmore, the way how he treated a family member of mine, and to watch a 79-year-old lady get evicted and not make sure no, you know, government people are out there. And I don't understand why that's not a requirement anyway, that if you're going to evict a senior citizen vessel or disabled, that if you don't have somebody from social service out there, then the eviction is off. Until you can showcase to me that this senior citizen, that or disabled, got somewhere to go. But I guess that since that's Governor Westmore policy, I got no love for him because I judge elected officials on how they treat their senior citizens that's in disabled. But since we're on the topic of this, these elected officials, now, first of all, Happy New Year's and Happy MLK Month. Now, didn't Donald Trump himself said that during Black holidays that you have to pay to get into the national parks?
I don't know. Probably. Wouldn't surprise me.
Okay. Now, if that is true, I would love for you on MLK Month to invite any black cabinet member from the White House so they can tell the public why they did not stand up to those white conservatives. If Donald Trump made that kind of suggestion, that black representation in the White House said, that's a stupid decision. You're going to insult. And let me say this again, blacks in the White House. You should have said that you're going to insult every black person that vote for you and help put you in office. Now, I don't blame Donald Trump for saying what he said. I blame the cowardly black representations in his cabinet, the gutless hypocrite cowards that they are, that did not stand up to those white conservatives and make some kind of racist statement like that. And that's the problem with our people, that we play the stupid Democrat versus Republican Party game, but we don't really call out your black people, that's in that position that has the ears of a president. They have an obligation to the black community to stand up for our people, Garland. And if they don't, they deserve to be called up. So I hope you invite one of them this month to come on your show. And Dr. Martin Luther King gave his life up for this country, and for them to spit in the face of black people like that. This man was talking about all women. We are all in this together, solidarity, solidarity, black and white. And here comes Donald Trump and the white conservatives make a stupid statement in a way that they made, and the black representations in there, who was in that meeting, allowed them damn-ass white conservatives to get along with. Shame on you blacks in the White House.
Let me throw something else at you that I think is down that line. You know, they've got a guy named Yehuda Kaplan that they just decided he's the anti-Semitism czar, right? Trump just named him. He's a czar. He worked for the federal government, and his job is to stop anti-Semitism, right? Oh, boy, that's just wonderful. Here's the issue. And people ain't going to like that I say it, but I don't really care because I'm a black person and I got a right to say something for black folks. Okay. Jewish people are what? 2% of America or less? 1-2% of America, right? Black folks are what? 13% of America? Let me add this. Jewish people, not all of them, but there were some Jewish people who owned slaves and who sold slaves in a slaves market. Now we have an anti-Semitism czar. His job is to work for the president and to make sure that nobody discriminates against Jews. But we don't have an anti-racism czar for the United States. Based on what you said, we got the opposite. Nobody, not Barack Obama, who was black, not any Biden, none of them ever said, I need an anti-racism czar. I need to put somebody in office to make sure there's no racism against black people. Not one ever. So here's my point. The people who were slaves don't have someone that's put in place to make sure they're not discriminated against. People whose ancestors own slaves do have someone in place to make sure they're not discriminated against. People who are still suffering poverty and other things from the history and the legacy of slavery that are still suffering today, we don't get a czar. Now, I'm not saying to Jewish people, y'all don't need somebody. I'm saying we live in a country that says the slaves, they ain't discriminated against. But people who were slave owners, we have to stand up for them first. That's America for you. That is the country that we live in. We're blessed.
But everything you say is accurate. But you got to explain the black community, because we still for some reason, have this mental slavery that we don't even buy our own selves. Because if we did, nothing that these politicians would do, we would have had somebody in there representing us. That's up to the black community to stop acting like we're slaves, get rid of mental slavery, and stop acting like you're second-class citizens. That still exists through the day because of mental slavery.
Doesn't it get back to your point? And here's your point. Have you heard? I mean, we always hearing this. We've got the first black, whatever, male, female in the Senate, in the House, into this, into that. We've got the Congressional Black Caucus. Why is it that two people on a radio show have to why is it that nobody, we got someone here, an anti-Semitism czar? If that's what you want, I don't have a problem with it. I got nothing against Jewish people who are concerned, but some Jewish people own slaves. Black folks were slaves. How come why is it that no black congressman, member of the House, Democrat, Republican, none of them brings it up? Why do you and I have to bring it up on the radio? Where we're supposed to be proud of these black folks in Congress.
They're going
to
lose money from their white donor class. You, brother, you know that's what that's about. It's about money. If they speak the way how they really feel, the good old white folks will stop sending them money. They'll kick them out of office, and then they go, I guess, back being an average black person. That's why they ain't gonna say anything. The fear of the white donor class from the left and the right is the reason why the black community is in the position we in right now. Until we get a new generation of black leaders that do not fear the white donor class, we are always going to be in this position, and it's up to Black America to say enough is enough. And we'll see what happens during the upcoming midterm election. Is the Black community going to fall for Black window dressers, or are we going to actually demand for justice for Black people who want in this country, brother? And before I get off the air, I wish you would have had Dr. Kwanga come on your show, the inventor of Kwanzaa, because it seems like people act like they're afraid to mention his name. Like Kwanzaa or not, it's part of Black culture. Peace.
Thank you very much. And we got any more calls? No, not right now. Okay. And I'm going to say this. So here I live in a country where there were people who will literally attack me. Well, Garland, you said something about the anti-Semitism czar. That means you're guilty of anti-Semitism. But if I say, well, I ain't got no problem with that. I'm just saying, why is it no black folks in Congress said, hey, Jewish people get an anti-Semitism czar. Bully, hooray for them. They got it. How come they got one before us, and how come we don't get one? They get mad at Dave Chappelle and people when they say, man, we've been here for 400 years, and all these people running around with, you know, they standing up for gay rights. Fine, I ain't for gay rights, but we got to wait 400 years, and we still don't get black rights. And it no matter who is at the table, and black folks are the ones that built the table. Everybody gets a seat at the table except the people that actually built the table. You know what? You could bring in people from Mars. I'm going to tell you right now, if a spaceship landed from Mars and a bunch of Martians got out, and then the Martians said, you know, I feel like because we're green and we got antennas and stuff like that, people mistreat us. Americans, the government would come up with somebody to stop discrimination against Martians within an hour, especially if the Martian says, oh, by the way, we brought some Mars gold and we got some Mars oil. Immediately, they would say, well, we have to stop this discrimination. We need an anti-Martian discrimination. Black folks been here for 400 years, slavery, beaten, racism, hung, everything you can think. And the government can never figure out that perhaps black people are suffering from the legacy of slavery. You can come in from another planet. They will have an anti-Martian racism, a czar. They'll have a whole section of the government that says we cannot have racism against Martians. If you say anything about Martians, you're going to jail. You're getting locked up. You're losing your job. You'll lose tenure at your college. You won't be able to go in Hollywood. You won't be able to do anything if you say anything that the Martians don't like. But heaven forbid, you can hang a half a dozen Negroes. They'll give you a Pulitzer Prize. It is pathetic. And why is it that we can't find anybody in Congress. We're supposed to celebrate for the members of Congress. You see, when they get elected, they say, you know, we've got the first black woman in charge of the first black male in charge of blah, blah, blah. And we're supposed to celebrate for their accomplishments. They got a good job. They're driving in a limo. And we're supposed to, all the black folks are supposed to feel good. Hey, you know, we've got the first black person doing this. We're supposed to jump up and down. And we get nothing. And they are not going to be a voice for us. And they're not going to say, hey, what about my black folks? And not happening. Now, they'll speak up for the Martians. They'll speak up for the Jewish people. They'll speak up for the gay people. They'll speak up for anybody that the system tells them to speak up for. But the system don't tell them to speak up for us. And they ain't going to do it. But we'll celebrate. We'll all be saying, well, we've got the first black whatever. That's what we get. We get the first black whatever. That's what we're supposed to be happy about. Yay, hooray, we got the first black whatever. That lasts for an hour. Yay, what a great celebration. All right, next call, you're on air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
This is Rick calling from Germany, brother.
Rick, what's happening?
I just want to get your take on the socialist Democrat elected mayor of New York.
I'm going to hurt some feelings. I think he's a fraud. Always thought he was a fraud. I think he's just another fraud. That's my opinion. I think he's just another man to say all the right things, and he's going to get in office, and he's going to do what he's paid to do. That's my opinion. But we shall see. But I think he's a fraud. Here's a guy who, when they ask him, what do you think about Maduro in Venezuela? What do you think about Cuba? Well, Maduro is a dictator who is mistreating his people. Well, that's a flat out lie. That's an absolute provable lie. With empirical evidence, it can be proven that that's a lie. So I'm supposed to feed. He might as well go join Trump in the attack on Venezuela to steal their oil. That's my feelings.
All right. All right. And I just want to say, if Condoleezza Rice ran for president, would you vote for her?
They might as well run David Duke, as far as I'm concerned. We'd be better off with David Duke, because you know he's a Klansman. See, the worst thing they could do is stick, because they'll stick somebody like Condoleezza Rice so we can celebrate. And then they'll put her in charge. And just like slavery, they'll put the whip in the hands of her, and she's got something to prove. She'll beat the Negroes twice times. What David Duke would. So they absolutely, no, I wouldn't.
Let me say in closing, poor people everywhere in America had better tighten their belts, put down the cigarettes, maybe even give up the coffee, and get some books for your kids to practice reading at home. Teach them how to read. And if you can't read, learn with them. I'm done, brother man.
Thank you. Let me just go back to something before we get ready to go and play house music. It's something that a lot of white people don't know. Something that black folks say when they're young, something that my dad might have said, and these two things go together, right? And it has to do with the importance of knowledge and education. And it was number one like this. If you want to hide your money from a Negro, where you put it? In a book. Number one. Here's the second part. What's the most dangerous man in the world? A Negro with a book. What were they saying? They were saying, why was it illegal to teach slaves? It was illegal during slavery to teach a slave to read and write. Why? Because they knew that there were Paul Robesons, there were Martin Luther Kings, there were Malcolm X's all over the place. But as long as you didn't let them learn how to read and write, you didn't have to worry about them being Paul Robeson or Martin Luther King or that, right? And that's why today, behind me is a stack of books. That's what makes me dangerous. Because I read. That's what makes you dangerous. If you read and learn, you are dangerous to the system. If you just sit down there and turn on the TV and repeat what you're told, you're a functionary. All right, everybody, email me if you want. It's garlandn@gmail.com. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on YouTube. You can find me on Telegram. I want to thank my main man, Kalia, for the fantastic job he does. You know what? I love my old school. We got to go way back. Let's hit some old school house music. I'm out.
I want to see all the ladies out there shaking that onion. Yeah. Shake it, baby. We'll be right back.
On Monday, January 19th, 9 a.m. until midnight, WPFW presents Injustice Anywhere, honoring the Pan-Africanist MLK and Haiti, the first sovereign Black Republic. From 9 a.m. until noon, we examine the Pan-Africanist legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. From noon until midnight, we center Haiti, her history, triumphs, troubles, and culture. That's Injustice Anywhere, honoring the Pan-Africanist, MLK, and Haiti, the first sovereign Black Republic. Monday, January 19th, 9 a.m. until midnight. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Inviting all D.C. hand dancers, Philly boppers, Chicago steppers, Carolina shaggers, and West Coast swingers. The Treehouse Dreamers venue offers dance music from Motown and more every Friday, 1 to 5 p.m. at 4722 14th Street Northwest. DJ Jammin' Dave and other fine DJs provide an atmosphere offering seniors socialization while getting much-needed quality movement through familiar tunes and dance every Friday. Details at 301-922-4064. That's 301-922-4064. WPFW offering wellness through dance, one activity at a time.
The Birchmere presents Derek Gripper and Balake Sissoko, January 14th. Avery Sunshine, January 17th. Will Downing, January 30th and 31st, and Babatunde Hip Opera, February 1st. Details at birchmere.com.
You're listening to WPFW 89.3 FM, Washington, D.C., going out the Maryland District, Virginia, and points beyond with 50,000 watts of community-supported jazz and justice. And the community is you, and we thank you, thank you, thank you, and thank you some more. We thank everyone who supported us. We thank everyone who supported us in our year-end fund drive and throughout 2025. Stay tuned.